Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Talk Back with C.E. Moore. This time around, I actually took a break from the interviewing duties, and our fiction editor, Melissa Willis, took the reins for the whole deal, as she sat down and talked with author Ronnie Kendig to talk about her newest book, Firethorn.
Today we talked about your new book, Firethorn, which is the final book in the Discarded Heroes series, and I have to say, I'm sad to see this series end. It's been really, really a great series. So tell our listeners a little bit about the series, and then in particular about Firethorn.
Okay. Firethorn is the final book in the Discarded Heroes series. I started it mainly with the intention of trying to open dialogue about what our military heroes were going through and them coming back to nothing. We expect them to kind of just reintegrate into society and everything be normal, but they have a new normal. So things are different for them, and that was the purpose of the Discarded Heroes. And Nightshade, the first book, came out in 2011, and 2010. and in Firethorn, it's kind of a culmination of all the books. There's a thread that went through all of the books, and we bring that to its conclusion in Firethorn with the main character being Griffin Rydell, a.k.a. Legend.
Okay, now, whenever I started this book, I was shocked because of all the characters that were on the team Nightshade, Legend is the last one I expected to find out that he was in prison because he just seemed to be very by the books, very straight and narrow kind of guy. But talk about how he ended up in prison and then how he handles that situation and his emotional reactions, struggles, and stuff about escaping prison.
Okay, well, for Legend, the biggest thing for him is honor. And he was set up, setting him up was also a way to kind of expose a little bit of the racism that still exists in our society today. Legend is very much a by-the-book guy, very straight-laced, but he was set up and made to look like he had committed this murder. And I had that scene all written out, and it was in the book, but the book was too long. So we kind of scaled it back and went with more flashback scenes. But he had been on a jog and saw something happening in like a tunnel, and he went to check it out, and there was the dead guy. And of course the cop showed up right then. So he was arrested because he was there on the scene of the crime, and they wouldn't buy his alibi. And then of course the general couldn't get him out of trouble. So despite all the strings he tried to pull, it wasn't possible to get Legend out of prison.
And he doesn't really handle prison very well from an emotional standpoint, does he?
No, because it is the antithesis of everything that he is. He has lived his life upright, morally, and, you know, just honor. That's what he is all about, is his honor and respect. And to be there, you know, he worked and he paid for his grandmother to be able to get out of the hood and have a nice home in a nice neighborhood and just have a real good life. And to be thrown in there, it collapsed him.
And one of the things that you had mentioned earlier with the Discarded Heroes series is that it's dealt a lot with post-traumatic stress disorder. And for the most part, it's been the post-traumatic stress disorder returning from combat. But Griffin's different. His PTSD was a result from earlier events of his life. And so talk a little bit about how his past and post-traumatic stress disorder differs from the rest of his teammates.
For Griffin, what happened when he was a kid, and that story is explored in Firethorn, he experienced post-traumatic stress disorder from those events in his childhood. And so he learned growing up just to suppress what he felt. And to him, he dealt with something, and he moved on. And to him, that was it. But really what he was doing was stripping himself of his emotions, to where he didn't think about stuff. He just dealt with it and moved on. But he kind of lost a bit of himself in doing that.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I had never thought of post-traumatic stress disorder outside of kind of the military setting until I read a book last year called Snitch by Booker T. Mathison. And it dealt with kids growing up in the hood in urban settings, and it was predominantly African-American children growing up and being subjected to all the violence and things surrounding their upbringing and not even realizing that they were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
So I kind of thought about that whenever I was reading Griffin's story, how it was his past as much as, I mean, his distant past and his upbringing as much as his immediate past with combat.
Yes. Yes, and it's only been in the past 20 years, 30 years, I can't remember the date, that combat-related PTSD went into the DSM-R4. And so it only became a recognized disorder just recently. I mean, after Vietnam and all that. But prior to that, you know, it was related to people who'd, you know, endured rape, children who'd gone through traumatic experiences as children. So it's not unique to the military. It's unique to humanity, really.
Interesting, because you don't really hear that much about it. I mean, it's just now recently kind of coming to the forefront. Now, this book, Darkthorn, it just moves at just a breakneck speed. I mean, this thing never stops. Very intense, and there's no downtime. When you were writing it, how were you able to just maintain the focus and the passion of the story for 350 pages?
It was really hard, and this really was the most complicated book I've ever written. I took pictures down off of my office wall, and I had paper taped all over the place and had, you know, kind of a visual map of everything. It was very draining because there was just so much going on, and I was having to tie up loose ends that had been, you know, that had been left from previous books. So it was really, it was exhausting for me as a writer, but I knew that the more tired I would be, I think the better book it would be.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, there are a few books that I read that actually keep that intensity throughout it, because, I mean, that's hard. I can sit there and see where it's hard, and I'm not a writer, but to be writing it, I can't imagine how y'all do that.
It can be very draining. I have to be really mentally prepared to write, and some nights it was excruciating because I was tired from the day, and you know, I write at night, so I usually don't start writing until about 8 o'clock when my twins start heading to bed. So usually about 9 o'clock I'm getting into my groove. So you know, I'm exhausted from the day, and then I have to be exhausted from the characters.
And I guess that explains why these poor characters went through so much. Beating. Talk about some of the difficulties that they went through, not just as individuals, but as a team. And, you know, why did you make them suffer so much?
Well, I have, maybe it's a twisted philosophy, but I have a philosophy. Life is never easy on us. We face one thing after another. Just as we climb over the crest of one hill, we realize there's a mountain in front of us. And so I wanted to keep that true. And with Firethorn being the final book, I wanted it to go out with a bang. I wanted it to be explosive. I wanted all of the characters to be remembered, even though this was Griffin's story. So I felt it was really important for each of them to have just another little baby step of growth so that they, you know, would not be forgotten in the reader's mind and that they would still very much be alive for the readers.
Boy, they sure had to go through a lot to stay alive.
They did. They did. This was about a fight as much for Nightshade as it was each of the characters. So they had to find out, you know, I think each character had to find out what Nightshade meant to them and what they were willing to fight for.
And you know, that actually brings up an interesting part, because one of the characters that really, he was always there, but he always seemed to be the front of the jokes, you know, the butt of the jokes, which was the kid, Marshall.
Right.
Kid. And he really, we really got to meet him in this book. He came to the forefront, and even though this was Griffin's story, we still really got to know Marshall a little bit well. What are some things that you think your readers will find out about Marshall that might be surprising to them?
Yeah, you know, you said that he had been the brunt of the joke, and he likes that, and he likes to keep things light, but you find out that he's got a lot of heart, that, you know, he's not just this really flimsy guy, you know, with no character and no courage, that he's just one of the ones that stay in the background but are as much a part of the support and structure of the team as any of the other men. I felt with Firethorn being the last book that if I did not introduce Marshall to the readers a little bit more, that he would have just been really cheated. You know, I've even toyed with the idea of writing a novella for him, you know, afterwards. I just hate, you know, saying goodbye to any of the team, but he was especially hard to say goodbye to because he was such a point of humor and kind of the glue that kept the team together in terms of, you know, they all picked on him in one way or another.
And, you know, I really didn't like him. I thought he was really rather pesky. And then in this book, he actually showed really intelligent.
Yes.
That shocked me because he was always, you know, the brunt of the jokes, the humor guy, the one that was goofing off. And then suddenly you find out, wow, he's actually got a brain. And it's a pretty good one. And so I thought he really came alive in this book, and I was really surprised. I'm glad you added that for him, because otherwise, I would have walked away from him not having just a ton of respect for his character.
Right. Well, you know, for him, he wasn't concerned about him. He never was. He was concerned about what was going on with the team. So he kind of knew how to shift the balance at times. And so you're right. You know, he is extremely intelligent, and he's almost one of those geeks, you know. He never really quite fit in anywhere. So, you know, his humor and his wit is what made him fit in.
Right. Well, now that the series is finished, who's your favorite character, and which book turned out to be your favorite?
You know, I've tried to answer that question, and I don't know that I had a favorite, because there's something favorite about each of them that I loved. And I know that sounds like a cliche answer, but, you know, Max, I loved his intensity. I mean, he was, you know, a man's man, but he had this huge tender side for his family. And then there was Colton, you know, the cowboy with as much charm as he had looks. And he was just, you know, grounded in the word, grounded in the Lord. And then you got Canyon, who, you know, a bit of a smart aleck and really the strong, quiet type. So, you know, I liked him. I liked his story. And then, of course, I loved Griffin, the big grizzly bear. So I don't know. I think I'm most proud maybe of Firethorn. Mm-hmm. Because it was the most complicated. This story stretched me like I'd never been stretched before. And so in that respect, I'm proud of Firethorn, but I thought I did a good job on Nightshade too. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't think I have a favorite. I mean, it could be kind of like saying which of my kids is my favorite. I can't do that.
That's fair enough. It, you know, of all of them, I actually ended up, I really didn't think that you could top Wolfsbane, because that one just hit home in every way. I loved the tension that was in there. There was something about those characters that, and I actually sort of know what it was. It was having the strong female that could keep pace with the strong male character. Mm. And it was that dynamic between the two that they worked together. And so I really liked that combination. So I didn't think you were going to be able to top it. And then you come up with Firethorn, and I'm sitting here thinking, it's got that same strong dynamic again, and I have no idea which of those two I like better.
That's fascinating. I love hearing your take on them.
Because they just, you know, they both were just really good stories. And I know that was the main thing, is that you had those two characters that could really keep up with each other. Mm. And that just added a whole nother twist to it, because there's also that struggle, you know, within, especially with this one, between Casey and Griffin, you know, of who is going to be the leader and the dominant one. which is, you know, you had mentioned that you had a little bit of subtlety on the racism issue. One part that I was surprised that was not brought out at all was the interracial relationship that would have been between those two. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to why you let that stay back.
Well, you know, I got a lot of grief initially when I was talking to people in my spheres of influence about doing an interracial couple, a multicultural book. I was told readers wouldn't buy it, that the sales wouldn't be as good. I was told that I would get slammed for being a white girl writing a black male lead. And so I wanted to respect that. So I did a tremendous amount of research on the African-American community. I had an amazing Michelle Stimson helped me a lot in the very beginning, helping me understand some things that I just, as a white person, had never really thought about. But this book wasn't about race. And so while I included, you know, aspects of that in there, that wasn't the focal point, but I didn't shy away from it either. You know, I don't see the point, especially in this type of book, of weighing down the story with that. Sure, it's there. That prejudice is there, and you know, I'm sure eventually I'll get a comment or two, but I haven't yet. And actually, the response has been very positive. I've had several people email me and say, "It's about time." And I had one woman email me, and she said she was just delighted to walk into the store and see my book on the shelf and see that it was a person of color. And so, you know, it's interesting. But as I wrote the story, that wasn't really as big of a deal between Griffin and Cassie. That wasn't their focus. They got to know each other. They built a respect for each other as people. And that's where their relationship started.
Yeah, I thought it was a refreshing change, too, because I was prepared, based on the cover, I thought that that was probably going to be a central point of conflict within their story, that there would be, you know, people on each side saying, this is not a good match or something like that. And I found it refreshing that we didn't have that issue, that because to me, I look at it and it's a non-issue.
Yeah,
I don't see that as being a big deal, and so I like the fact that was left out.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up military, so I grew up around a very diverse, you know, group of people. So when I moved south, I still didn't see it because I was still, you know, we were at Fort Hood, and so, you know, I had boyfriends when I was a teen who were African American and Chinese, and you know, race just wasn't a thing. We were people doing the same things. So it was just really shocking to me to learn how much there still was in the world, you know. And so I don't see it that way. I respect the cultures, everybody. You know, I treated, you know, his background as an African American just like I would treat any other, you know, aspect of his character, and research it carefully and make sure it's true and authentic as much as I can. So but that wasn't the point of the story as much. So thank you for saying that.
Okay, good. Well, this series is over. I'm still pulling for another one, by the way.
I know. Me too.
I want another one in this series.
I would love that too.
But right now, that's not on the schedule, is my understanding.
No,
so
it's
what's
not.
For you.
I am actually, I've turned in the first book in my Military War Dog series called A Breed Apart. The book, first book is Trinity, Military War Dog, and it's about a Belgian Malinois who has done combat, and her handler has done combat, and they're out now, and so they join A Breed Apart. And I am now also working on Talon, which is the second book, and that explores canine PTSD, which is just, I mean, it's just kind of sad. The poor guy, he's got PTSD, and it's just, you know, dogs shouldn't be sad. It just kind of breaks your heart to kind of see it. But, yeah, then there'll be one more book in that, and that'll be the A Breed Apart series. And that first book, Trinity, will come out this August.
Okay. And you're also working on 7-Hour Project, too, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited about that. Tyndale leapt at that opportunity to publish. It's just the coolest little project with 7 authors writing 7 stories about 7 hours. And they're trying to keep things under wraps right now, so I can't say a whole lot, but it was really fun to kind of spread some of my speculative wings there and do this project with them. I was very tickled. They've got Mike Deloso, Renee Gutteridge, Tom Pollock, Travis Thrasher, James Andrew Wilson, and I don't know how many I named off. I always start going cross-eyed there, but anyway, it's a really fantastic project, and Tyndale is going to release it through their Digital First program, so it'll be completely digital. If there's a big enough demand, they said that they'll put it in print, but it'll be a giant, you know, an omnibus of roughly 30,000 words for each of our stories, so about 100-page stories.
Well, that'll be good. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Now, where can our, well, actually, before I ask this last question, I do have a spoiler question that's going to come up. But before we do that, go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and your book.
Okay, my website is ronniekendig.com, and I'm also on Facebook at Rapid Fire Fiction, and I'm also on Twitter at Ronnie Kendig.
Okay, and the next couple of questions are going to be spoilers, major, major spoilers. And so if anybody's listening that hasn't read the book, you need to hop off the line right now because you don't want to hear these.
Are you dragging out the coals?
Yes, because we are going to get to the end of this book. And, oh, I was so sad. Okay, so here we go. Last warning for people to hop off if they haven't read the book. At the end of Nightshade, Marshall dies. Kid, so sad. Couple of questions on this one.
Okay.
What was it like to kill this character that you've spent so much time creating? And when did you know he was going to die?
At first, it was absolutely brutal because he was one of those annoying characters that you just grow to love. And you root for them, you know, you see them when the underdog comes, you know, from behind and just becomes the hero. It's really, really hard. I bawled my eyes out. I remember as I typed, I typed the scene, you know, probably the 2 chapters where that happens. I typed that so fast because I was terrified if I stopped, I wouldn't be able to continue. And afterwards, I just sat there and I just, you know, face in hands, just sobbed my heart out. Because not only was he gone, I realized this is truly the end of the discarded heroes. And that was just devastating. I've invested 3 years, you know, of my life in these characters. And it was just, oh, it was really devastating. Poor Marshall.
You know, what was so funny about that, too, is that you had, you know, Colton basically hooked, or not Colton, Canyon hooked up to IVs and blood transfusions almost.
Uh-huh.
So he's on death's door, and none of the rest of them are looking that much better. And, you know, Marshall's not in bad shape. And he's the one
killed. Yeah, you think, it's, you know, right there you're at the scene, and you're thinking, okay, phew, we got him, we got the bad guys. And then you get the rug ripped out from under you, and, you know, that's, you know, sadly, that's what our real military heroes deal with. And I did not want to shy away from this. And you'd asked me when I knew that Marshall was going to die. And I knew as soon as I finished Nightshade. And, yeah, in fact, if you look in the front of Firethorn, in my acknowledgments, I wrote a note to my agent, and I said, if readers hate me after reading this book, it's your fault, just saying. Besides, you're the one who said it's always the agent's fault. But he was the one, because I told him, I said, I don't know what to do, because I saw that, and I saw it. I saw Marshall get hit, and I said, but, you know, readers are loving him. I was really kind of surprised how many readers, you know, emailed me, said they loved Marshall, they loved the kid. And I was like, they'll hate me. And I said, I can't do that. And he was like, do it. And I just kind of looked at him, and he said, I was like, are you serious? And he said, do it, but make it powerful and make it matter. And he said, you know, that's where you're going to grip your reader. And so I just wasn't sure about that. But he also told me, don't tell anybody. So I didn't. I didn't tell any of my critique partners or anything that he was going to die. I told my husband. I didn't even tell my daughters who were reading. So nobody knew that was coming except for me. So it was really hard, because even my editor at the time was trying to get me to do this and that with Marshall, but she didn't know what was coming. And so I just kind of had to bite my tongue. It was really tough.
I bet so. Well, what was the reaction from the reader so far? Because, I mean, I remember you put a Facebook post up asking, you know, who people would like to see more about. And this was before I read Firethorn. I was sitting there thinking, I really didn't like him. And then suddenly I read Firethorn, and I thought, okay, well, that ain't going to happen now.
Well, and, you know, I still do. I would love to somehow do a novella or even a book, you know, kind of a what if that day didn't happen? What if things ended differently type of book? I don't know if that would ever fly. But, you know, readers did love him. And I was really scared, I mean, that I was going to lose my readers, because there were some that just were advocating for a book for him. And I thought, they're going to hate me. They're not ever going to talk to me or trust me again. And I've gotten a lot of, how could you do this, emails. But they've pretty much have all said that it was really one of the most powerful scenes they'd ever read. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't go to sleep afterwards. And my son, he actually came in there, and he was looking at me because, you know, I was sniffing. Oh, gosh, I never cry on books. I'm not. That is not me. So I'm sitting there sniffing and crying, and my oldest one is looking at me like, what's up? And I said, she's guilty. And so we, you know, we had a lot. He and I sit down, and it turned out to be a good discussion by the time it was all said and done about, yeah, you know, power of literature and how it can really affect you and drive home those points, because really it wasn't just his death, it was also the aftermath and the things that occurred after that that sets up, you know, I even started my review with that fabulous quote from his dad, that, you know, the true humanitarians are the ones that are going out there and risking their life for every, you know, for anyone.
Right.
And I loved it. I hated to see him die, especially since I finally started liking him. But, you know, gosh, how else could you end it? I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought about trying to go another way, but it just felt flat. And it was kind of interesting because my editor had a very strong reaction. And she wrote me a short note and said, you know, I just read the ending. And I can't remember exactly what she said, but I was worried. And so I got another, you know, she's like, just give me some time to process this. You're really going to make some readers mad. And then she left me and was like, for 2 days. And I'm thinking, oh, man. And she came back and she told me, she said, you did the right thing. She said, but it took me 2 days to process that. Yeah. And I was blown away, because that told me that it worked. You know, it was so hard to write. It was, like I said, I was typing so fast because I was so scared to stop, because I knew I wouldn't be able to pick it back up. So, anyway.
Well, it turned out good. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate the time to get to talk to you again. I love this series. I hate to see you go, but I know I'll get things with you.
Thank you. I've really appreciated your support and encouragement through the whole series.
Well, I look forward to talking to you again whenever some of your new projects come up.
Same here. Yeah.
And thank you.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.